Thank you, Allison. I think that's my generic disclosure. I'm not going to talk about Tdap and pregnancy in this presentation, but in one this afternoon. So I'm going to share with you some experiences from San Diego as part of a large project that we're working on now to basically study the implementation of adolescent vaccination and understand more about how that happens in the context of the other clinical preventive services that need to happen in adolescent visits, all crammed into single, relatively short well-child visits. I'd like to acknowledge all of my co-authors, including Robin Curtis, who is our CDC project officer till she went off and had twins, and Allison has picked up and helped guide us through this second phase of our study. This study, as I mentioned, has been carried out in San Diego in conjunction with our local Department of Health Immunization Branch. And the background for the study, as you all know or you wouldn't be here, is that teen immunization coverage rates are still well below the Healthy People 2010 goals, which were passed now, and we have lots of work to do. And the basic question that this particular study is designed to help address is how vaccines compete with other clinical preventive services, which I may call CPSs for the rest of this presentation. And as part of that, how do physicians really prioritize all of the tasks that they need to do in an adolescent visit? We, of course, in this room would like to think immunizations is number one, but you will see that that isn't necessarily the case. This is an overview of the various things we're doing to help address this question. We are surveying patients and parents, so adolescents and their parents, to get a sense of what's happening in preventive care visits. We're doing chart verification and survey to basically compare what the parent and adolescent say with what is documented in the medical record. We're doing more general chart reviews to try and get a good evidence base for what coverage rates are and rates of clinical preventive services. And what this presentation this morning is about is a key informant interview that we did at the beginning of this study in a variety of practices to try and gauge background climate in clinics that serve adolescents with regard to many of the key topics that you'd like to know about. We have solicited participation from a variety of clinics, from large medical groups. Those are large practices with usually multiple offices and multiple providers within each office. Some individual private practices and community clinics, which are nonprofit health centers in our community. We have solicited practices which are staffed by pediatricians or consider themselves pediatric clinics that see adolescents, some clinics that are specifically adolescent or teen clinics, and some family medicine clinics. And our major ethnic diversity in San Diego is Hispanic and the rest, and so we have both high and low Hispanic populations represented by the clinics that we're going to present on. So today's presentation is the summary of key informant interviews from seven of those types of clinics, the range of those types of clinics. We did an organized key informant interview with a survey tool that was pilot tested. The interviews were pretty long, 25 to 40 minutes, 38 questions all together. The interviews were recorded and coded and put into a database so that we could be consistent in our interpretation of what we heard from the physicians. So launching into the topics that we covered and some of the results, first of all, pay for performance, which is an incentive program in place in many communities around the United States where, in theory, individual physicians receive compensation for achieving certain quality goals. These programs are funded by health plans. In California, that's done on a voluntary basis, so not all health plans participate, not all physician groups participate. And in our survey, we found that four of the seven clinic types that I outlined were participating in pay for performance. However, the physicians indicated that the participation in pay for performance had little or perhaps no influence on their delivery of adolescent immunizations or CPS counseling. And the quotes on this slide and all subsequent slides are simply examples, in some cases, of the extremes of comment that we received, or to summarize the consensus opinion. This first one, any potential bonuses actually go to the whole medical group and nothing ends up in my pocket, was a common one. And I would vaccinate optimally every time. I don't care what they have to say. So this was sobering for me. I've always held out the hope that pay for performance really would motivate lots of physicians. And this is, of course, a small sample and just a key informant interview. But it's given me some pause with regard to the prospects for pay for performance. Related to that is HEDIS, which is a quality improvement measure used by health plans to measure their performance, and they are constantly trying to get providers to follow the guidelines that are outlined in HEDIS. Six of the seven physicians at least knew about HEDIS and felt that they were participating. The truth is they all were, really. But only one of the six interviewed reported that HEDIS was influential to their delivery of adolescent immunizations. The HEDIS measure currently is one dose of meningococcal vaccine and one dose of Tdap vaccine. And none of the physicians reported that HEDIS was influential to their delivery of adolescent preventive services. That actually makes sense, because the only HEDIS measure at the time we were doing this interview was whether an adolescent had a preventive service visit. It wasn't about what happened during that visit. I think the 2011 HEDIS measures include some measure of whether preventive counseling occurs. So this may change over time. Reimbursement is generally an issue that physicians bring up as a barrier to immunization delivery at all ages. With regard to clinical preventive services, five out of the seven physicians felt that reimbursement for those particular services were not adequate. It takes a lot of time to do preventive counseling. And two out of the seven felt that immunization reimbursement was not adequate. Reminder recall, something that most of you in this room have learned over the years at this meeting, is a very effective strategy to improve immunization coverage. Only one of the seven physicians reported using phone reminder systems, which in some studies are felt to work best in an adolescent population. I guess the modern version is text messaging, which we may learn more about at this meeting. And none of the seven were using any kind of recall for adolescents, which is particularly relevant for Dr. Schuchat's charge to us all that we get HPV-3 levels up, which often requires recall to get patients to complete the whole three-dose series. Preventive care during sick visits. We were a little surprised to learn from this group that five out of the seven practices reported delivering preventive counseling during sick visits. Some of that preventive counseling was focused on the topic of the sick visit, but some said that the preventive they tried to get in more general preventive counseling because of the concern that they might not see the adolescent again for a subsequent well-child visit in which there would be more time for that. We are doing chart audits and, we, as I mentioned, patient surveys to try and verify this report in the key informant interview to see to what extent this really is happening. And six out of the seven reported administering vaccines at sick visits, which is counter to some of the data we've seen, at least in our community in the past, with pediatric vaccines, younger child vaccines. So again, the chart audits will let us know whether this is really happening. Vaccine forecasting modules or decision support using our immunization registry or an electronic medical record, not yet being used by the majority of these physicians. Standing orders, another evidence-based practice for improving immunizations. Only two out of the seven using standing orders with comments still such as there's too much potential for mistake and the medical group won't let us do that. So I think we have a way to go, borrowing in some extent from adult immunization practices, to bring that down to adolescent providers and let them know that standing orders do in fact work. And far as I know, there's no significant evidence that mistakes are increased through standing order process. We asked specifically about what these physicians felt that their group, what barriers their group faced with regard to delivery of immunization. And these are the reported ones. Still parental misconception and refusal about vaccine. This surprised me a little. I thought the majority of that concern was housed in parents of young children, but apparently the physicians are still having to do a fair amount of discussion about vaccine safety and necessity, particularly around HPV vaccine. Lack of adolescent visits, insufficient time to really deal with both immunizations and preventive services was raised as a concern. And lack of immunization histories, speaking to the need for better communication between immunization information systems and electronic records as we move forward. Barriers to delivery of preventive counseling, lack of time was the primary one mentioned. And the last one, adolescents unwilling to listen. Wrapping up the raising of my third adolescent, I'm surprised this wasn't 7 out of 7, but we ask these providers what single thing would they like to see implemented in their practice that they are not currently doing that would hopefully raise their ability to provide immunizations. And reminder recall was the highest of those, and I think that's encouraging because in most places we have the systems in place to generate reminder recall if we can just get these clinics to participate. And the other two are sort of also related to the use of immunization information systems and their integration with electronic medical records. Focus a little bit on HPV. 5 out of the 7 reported that they promote HPV vaccine equally to young adolescent girls as they do to older. However, comments such as in our patient population, we don't have that many families that want it at that age are still out there. We need to continue to focus on the importance of getting that vaccine done in prior to sexual debut, or else it loses some of its efficacy. In terms of completing the three-dose HPV series, few physicians were actually using a postcard reminder system, and if you're sharp, you notice that more people report using a form of reminder here than reported that on the first question where we asked that. So I think there's a little bit of disconnect, and we found this around the reports about HEDIS and pay for performance between what the physician said and what some of their office administrators say is happening in the office. So I think that's worth keeping in mind that the physicians may not be aware of some of the things going on behind in the background. And one system used a manufacturer reminder system, which is available to help bring girls back for doses 2 and 3. Only one used some kind of prompt system in the EMR, which I know the Rochester group is investigating more thoroughly whether prompts will be used and can be used. Vaccine refusals, again, to my surprise, 5 out of 7 reported some concern about vaccine refusal in the adolescent population, but only 2 out of the 5 actually thought they'd seen an increase in that percentage of refusals. So I think some of this may be spillover from the pediatricians who see both young children and adolescents and sort of being generic in their concern about vaccine refusal, whereas most of that's focused in the younger population. We asked about their willingness to support alternative sites for vaccination, pharmacies, schools, community events, and the majority of these groups were in support of having vaccines administered to adolescents at alternative settings. And there was not too much concern about these adolescents then not coming in for the clinical preventive services that they also want to deliver. But their concerns around this issue were that the documentation be such that they are aware that their adolescents are getting immunized, and they also wanted to be sure that the vaccinators were qualified in those alternative settings. To try and understand how physicians prioritize all of the things they need to do in a preventive visit, we gave them a list of activities, physical exam, CPS counseling, immunizations, and answering parent and patient questions. We asked them to prioritize those 4 activities in a number of scenarios. For example, a patient they'd never seen before who was coming in for a sick visit, a sprained ankle or whatever, or one of their established patients who was coming in for an annual sports physical. So trying to cover the gamut of experience with the patient as well as the reason for the visit. And this is some of the results from that prioritization. Physical exam consistently ranked as their first priority during all of those types of exams. Preventive counseling generally outranked immunizations in almost all of the scenarios. Those two issues were usually ranked second and third, although more frequently preventive counseling was ranked above immunization. Answering parent questions was last on the priority list of these providers. And for, interestingly to me, immunizations was ranked the lowest for established patients. I guess maybe the thinking is, well, this is an established patient. They'll come back if I don't happen to get them immunized today. And we will be looking at that by looking at missed opportunity rates in those different types of patients and see if we can tease that out. So to conclude the results from this key informant interview, I think that quality improvement efforts, systematic ones such as HEDIS or pay for performance, may not impact physician behavior as much as we think. Physicians may also not be aware of some of the quality improvement activities going on in their offices. That best practices for immunization delivery, such as reminder recall or standing orders, are not being widely utilized, at least in our community. That alternative settings for adolescent immunization are supported with some limitations on who does that and how that data gets communicated. And the bottom line, immunizations may be a lower priority than other services in certain circumstances with adolescent providers. Again, acknowledging the authors and the participation of our local health department. Thanks.